Chapter 1. Rissa Matthews glanced into the rearview mirror and groaned when she spotted red and blue flashing lights. Oh, great. Oh, this is just great. She took her foot off the gas pedal and rolled to a stop off the road, the police cruiser following closely behind. Swearing under her breath, she reached beside her for her purse. It wasn't there. Mouth open in panic, she leaned over to feel beneath the empty seat beside her. Had it slid in between the passenger seat and the door? No, 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 you've got to be kidding me. Put your hands where I can see them, a deep baritone ordered from her left. Slowly. Raising her head, she found herself staring into a pair of thickly lashed green eyes set amidst a sun-browned face and sharp, angular features. A broad-rimmed Stetson covered the officer's head, and a khaki uniform shirt stretched across his wide chest, but it was the sun's reflection off the man's badge that had her imagining it was laughing at her. She'd been pulled over by North Star's very own sheriff. What were the odds on him letting her go? Rissa straightened, slowly, and immediately noticed from her higher position in the truck that his hand rested on the butt of his gun. Ma'am, do you know how fast you were going? Not exactly. Who had time to pay attention to the speed limit when summoned by an irate principal? You were driving 79 in a 55. License and registration, please.
Oh.
Is there a problem, ma'am? Rissa looked at the empty seat beside her, her hands fisted in frustration. Why today of all days? I don't have it, she admitted, her voice low. And my license? I mean, I do have a license, but I don't have it with me. Her embarrassment heightened when one of the sheriff's eyebrows rose in response to her words. I see. Your name? Rissa Matthews. And where were you going in such a hurry in the Roland's new truck, Ms. Matthews? The casually posed question didn't disguise the underlying query, and Rissa realized if she didn't talk fast, she'd not only wind up with a ticket she couldn't afford, but also a free trip to jail until he could determine whether the truck was stolen. Then where would her daughter be? Probably right beside her. Do you know the Rolands? She asked, hopeful. I'm Maura's cousin. I'm staying at the Second Chance and helping Seth and Grace. You can call and confirm I have permission to drive the truck. The sheriff stared at her, his gaze assessing. Maybe loosening up a little? She and Maura resembled each other, had the same hair and build passed on from their mothers. I just might do that, he drawled with a bit of a western twang, but first tell me why you were speeding. Are you on an errand for the ranch? She wanted to say yes, but she would be lying, and she was a horrible liar. The Second Chance was a fully operating year-round ranch and vacation resort, one for physically impaired guests and their families. Guests could ride horses, fish, snowmobile, and ski with full thought and consideration given to any special needs. Maura had made two trips to town this week to obtain something for a guest, so trips into the small town weren't unusual. No, but I'm late. I ran out of gas and had to walk back to the ranch and borrow the truck. Now my daughter's waiting for me to pick her up at school. I'm late for appointments I can't miss, and she clamped her mouth shut. If he were going to give her a ticket, there was nothing she could do about it. Rambling certainly wouldn't help, and doing so only reinforced the typical first impression most assumed when they spotted her blonde hair and curvy frame. But pride or no pride, she couldn't afford a ticket. Smothering a moan, she rubbed her aching temple. Look, Sheriff, I know you've probably heard every excuse under the sun when it comes to people trying to get out of tickets, but I had my purse in my car when I left the house. Really? I must have left it behind when I switched vehicles. And I know I was speeding, she reluctantly added, but I had the truck under control, no one else was on the road. I was on the road. And most highway speed limits are 70 now, so I wasn't driving that much over the norm. She tried to appeal to his sense of fairness. Surely you've been late at least once and driven faster than you were supposed to. Her direct question earned a slight lifting of his lips at the corners, and Rissa chose to take the gesture as a sign the lawman was softening. Hope soared, and she gave him a rusty smile. Why not? Her appearance was often a hindrance to her goals, and it was definitely a hindrance when it came to her job. A female pilot in a male-dominated world, she'd often downplayed her looks. Maybe this once they would help? Without comment, the sheriff's gaze shifted from her eyes and face to where her arm rested along the window, his expression carefully neutral. Give me your social security number and spell your name. She did and watched while he wrote them down. Keys. He lifted his hand, palm open, the calluses on his skin rough against hers when they brushed together during the exchange. A tingling sensation shot up her arm. Don't move. Rissa watched him in the rearview mirror, unwillingly noting the masculine grace in his long-legged stride. A couple cars passed, and she wanted to sink down and hide when the occupants rubbernecked to get a look. Ignoring them the best she could, Rissa leaned her head back against the seat and stared out the window up at the cloudless sky. She pushed aside the upset she felt at herself for making such a stupid, costly mistake, and thought about the long list of things she needed to be doing, instead of sitting by the side of the road with her fate in the sheriff's hands, awaiting what would probably be a huge fine. Minutes passed, and with them her impatience grew until she spotted a bird flying high overhead in the vast sea of blue, and focused on it instead. Dipping and soaring, gliding, the sight brought a smile. Some women took hot baths to relax, she liked to skim the treetops. But after being let go from her job due to cutbacks, Jake's brand new Dodge Ram pickup had the honor of being the fastest thing she'd piloted after selling her BMW Z4. Ms. Matthews? She started at the sheriff's return, but if he noticed her reaction, he didn't let on. Instead, he studied his notepad, the broad-rimmed hat shading his face until all she could see was his mouth and chin. It seems speeding isn't new to you, and you received a ticket a little over a year ago for the same problem. Were you running late then, too? Rissa straightened the hem of her light pink t-shirt. Actually, it was a family emergency. My husband and daughter had been in a car accident and, she pictured Skylar lying in the ER hospital bed, cut and bloody, hysterical, screaming for her dad on the other side of the curtain. My husband didn't make it. My daughter couldn't be sedated because the hospital said to hurry, so I did. She wasn't about to apologize for it, either. Silent, the sheriff shifted his weight and tapped the narrow book against his fingers twice. Finally, he flipped it closed with a heavy sigh. Rissa blinked at him, confused, until she took in his expression and realized she wasn't the only one who'd known loss and pain. If I let you go, it won't happen again, she promised huskily. Make sure it doesn't. You might be running late today, but no one is hurt. Slow down and keep it that way so that your daughter isn't trying to get to the hospital to see you. You're letting me off. Relief swept through her, and she caught her breath at the wry twist of his lips she received in response to her question. It softened his angled features, made her heart do a little jump, skip, and thump she didn't expect. Yeah, I'm letting you off, with a warning to slow it down or else pay the price next time. Understood. Thank you, she glanced at his name tag, Sheriff Taggart. Seriously, thank you. He held out the truck keys. Drive safely. I will. Rissa flashed him a grateful smile and started the engine, waiting for him to step away before she slowly eased back onto the highway. Within moments, the sheriff's broad-shouldered image faded in the distance, but she had a hard time making him disappear from her thoughts. What had happened to him to put that look in his eyes? What kind of pain had he endured? 15 minutes later, she still contemplated the questions to keep from having to think about her own problems, namely her daughter, when she pulled into North Star Middle School's parking lot. The office was located on the other side of a vestibule, and she continued through the second set of doors, pausing when a woman heard her and raised her head. A wary, dread-filled expression crossed her face before she quickly masked the look and pasted on a smile. "Mrs. Matthews?" Rissa's stomach tightened. "Yes, I'm Rissa Matthews. Delia Klein, counselor for the middle and high school students. I was away at a meeting the day you registered your daughter." The woman held out her hand, and Rissa shook it. "Sorry, I'm late." The counselor dropped several files on a nearby desk and waved Rissa deeper into the reception area. "No problem. It gave me some time to clear my desk while Mr. Klein and I waited." "Didn't you say your name was Klein?" She nodded. "Yes. My husband is the principal here. This way, please." Suddenly awkward, Rissa smoothed her hands over her jeans and looked around, trying not to breathe too deeply. The school smelled of bleach and artificial air fresheners, the remnants of lunch and old paper. Delia Klein's matronly form led the way down a short, tiled hall past several other offices, one of which had the woman's name written on it. Skylar was nowhere to be seen. They entered the office at the end of the hall, and a balding man in his late 40s or early 50s stood, his weary expression declaring it had been a long day. "Mrs. Matthews, welcome." Once again, she held out her hand and made sure to keep her grip firm. "Mr. Klein, please sit down." He indicated the two chairs across from his desk. "I'm sorry to request a meeting on such short notice, but we decided it might be best." "Okay." Rissa seated herself, but wished she'd waited when Mr. Klein rested a hip against the desk in a casual pose and his wife remained standing two steps away. Both stared at her, their faces pitying. The principal cleared his throat. "Mrs. Matthews, let me begin by saying we realize the first week at a new school is always trying, but we do our best to make sure new students are welcomed. However, I must admit your daughter has not made this experience easy." "I gathered that by the phone call." "Yes, well, I don't know how to put this other than bluntly, but your daughter's physical appearance has proved to be a little daunting to some of our students." They thought the students were daunted? A belligerent teenager had taken over and changed her daughter from the inside out. Removed her girl next door fresh-faced appearance and changed it to goth girl, child of the night. Moving so far away from a place where her appearance might have been accepted can't be easy, and a period of adjustment is called for, Delia Klein offered. "That's why we didn't immediately call you when she had trouble earlier in the week." Rissa shifted on the uncomfortable chair, the knot in her stomach growing with every word. Skylar's appearance hadn't been the norm at home either. "What kind of trouble?" Mr. Klein exchanged another glance with his wife. The first was a spat, a group of girls arguing in the hall between classes. They were warned to behave, and the incident dropped. Today, however, there was a full-fledged fight. He cleared his throat once more, his solemn gaze meeting hers. "One of our teachers witnessed Skylar throwing the first punch. As I'm sure you are aware, our duty as administrators is to protect the student body and teach them, guide them, and to set examples when confronted with bad behavior," Mrs. Klein murmured pointedly. "Meaning?" The question came out soft and thready, revealing too much. Delia Klein's mouth tightened. "I'm sorry, Mrs. Matthews, but along with today's punishment, Skylar has been issued detention after school all next week. 2 hours a day, all 5 days. We understand this might be an inconvenience for you being so new to town, but we think detention is better than expelling her under the circumstances, with the school year ending in a matter of weeks." It certainly was an inconvenience. Staying 2 hours after school meant Skylar couldn't ride the bus out to the ranch. Rissa would have to come pick her up, the drive nearly an hour round trip. I understand, she murmured dazedly. What else could she say? May I suggest something? The counselor unfolded her arms and walked over to sit in her husband's desk chair. The move drew Riss's attention, and that's when she noticed the credenza behind the desk, where a collage of framed photographs on top showcased the bright, smiling faces of their family. Older kids from the looks of it. What could it hurt to get advice from people who'd survived teenagers? Of course. Perhaps you could talk to Skylar about blending in more, easing up on the makeup and concentrating on making friends? Did they think she hadn't tried that? Individuality is important. Absolutely, the principal confirmed, evidently sensing the beginning of her parental defense. But right now, and in this small community, Skylar's individuality is a little too different. It's frightening to some. Especially after all the news reports of school shootings resulting from teenagers thought to be outsiders. Rissa stood, her hands clenched into fists. You've profiled her. We've done no such thing, the principal argued. I'm simply relaying to you the thoughts of other parents. Parents who have seen Skylar this past week and are concerned. They've voiced their apprehension to me, and after observing Skylar with the other students, well, it appears the children are projecting the same attitudes in regard to her appearance. Mrs. Matthews, losing a loved one is difficult on anyone, Mrs. Klein interjected softly. We understand that, and her last counselor documented Skylar's changes in behavior and personal appearance very well, enabling us to grasp the enormity of what Skylar underwent with the accident and loss of her father. But I'm sure you are aware not everyone retreats behind a mask, and the fact that Skylar has changed so drastically in the course of a single year, it only adds to our concern. She glanced at her husband quickly before focusing on Rissa again. There are professionals who might be better equipped to help your daughter. She's seen them. $300 an hour shrinks, who knew what they were talking about. Didn't they? I was told to leave her alone and let her express herself how she wants. To wait until she's ready to talk about what happened. She simply needs more time. I don't doubt that's true, and a good idea in theory, Mrs. Matthews, but the reality is we must stand firm. Skylar's behavior cannot be allowed to continue. Violence is unacceptable in our school, and we won't allow Skylar to upset our student body or harm them. Jonas had watched Rissa Matthews pull onto the highway before he'd walked back to the cruiser and climbed inside. Driving home, his mind remained preoccupied with the beautiful blonde and the information her social security number had revealed. He didn't need the computer to tell him that New York City was big and bustling with too many people. Too much everything. Crime, poverty, wealth, and everything in between. Everything North Star wasn't. Topping 20-plus miles over the limit and not carrying her license, he'd had no intention of letting her off with a warning. But the look in her eyes, her expression when she'd told him about the last ticket she'd received, had gotten to him. Who wouldn't have done the same in that situation? You'll probably find out later, she lied. If that were the case, so be it. But until then, he'd give her the benefit of the doubt and keep an eye on her for future speed violations. Her record showed she hadn't received any drug-related citations, and the standard check for alcohol and drugs turned up nothing. She was clean. Just speeding. Which is why he'd listened to his instincts and let her go. People deserved a break every now and again, and he'd given Rissa Matthews one. Just one. Nothing wrong with that. Jonas stepped inside his house only to come up short when confronted with Caroline's thunderous expression. His daughter stalked toward him from the kitchen. What's wrong? He asked, the car already parked in the driveway when he'd pulled in, giving him a good indication. I'm not going. Her mouth flattened into a mulish line. Jonas glanced over her head to the kitchen beyond, before shutting the door behind him. What is it this time?
Ballet.
It's boring. Dad, please don't make me go.
Your grandma likes taking you to new places.
You've never been to a ballet before. Maybe you'd enjoy it.
He watched her cross her arms over her flat chest, then did a double take when he suddenly realized she wasn't so flat anymore.
When had that happened?
You'll go too.
We'll talk about it later.
Aha. That's what I figured.
Jonas ignored Caroline's put-out tone and listened to the sounds of his ex-mother-in-law's weekly visit. The dishwasher was running in the kitchen, the washer and dryer were on in the hall, and the sweeper sat out in the living room.
He frowned.
Did you tell her we'd?
Yeah.
Do you think she thinks we did anything right? Caroline rolled her eyes. The dishes had a film on them, she informed him sourly. The clothes are too wrinkled, and she saw a speck of dust on the floor.
She shook her head.
Like, how hard is it to clean?
It's not calculus.
Jonas took his hat off and hung it on the peg by the door.
I'll talk to her.
Anything happen at school today?
No.
It was the same answer he'd received every day for a while now. The same look. What happened to the little girl who used to burst into the house, talking 90 miles a minute?
There you are.
Caroline, why didn't you tell me your father was home? His daughter made a face her grandmother couldn't see, and headed down the hall toward her room.
Dinner's in.
I know. Marilyn shook her head at Caroline's response.
Jonas, really, you need to take her in hand.
She's rude.
Trust me, you don't know rude until you've seen and dealt with some of the kids out there.
Still, there's no time to waste. She's getting to an age where.
Jonas tuned out while he sorted through the mail lying on the entry table.
Sweepstakes, credit card application, credit card bill, electric bill, mortgage. Marilyn droned on, and he kept flipping.
Water bill.
An acrid scent reached him, and he paused, sniffing. Is something burning?
Marilyn stopped mid-rant.
The bread. Grimacing, Jonas followed her into the kitchen, and winced when he spotted the smoky haze filling the air. Marilyn grabbed a pot holder and yanked open the oven door.
Smoke billowed out.
I told her to watch the bread. One little thing she could have done to help me, but did she? Now it's ruined.
Ruined.
As though waiting for the climactic moment, the fire alarm went off at the height of her cry, and Jonas waved one of the envelopes beneath it to clear the smoke. Caroline reappeared in the doorway.
Grandma, I'm sorry.
I forgot the bread.
How could you forget?
It was one little thing.
The alarm sputtered, squawking twice more before ending.
Jonas tossed the mail aside, opened the patio door, and motioned his daughter to his side.
It's okay, Marilyn.
It's not ruined, see?
A little black on the bottom.
We'll peel it off and eat the middle and top.
Like we always do, right, Dad?
He chuckled, wondering if they'd hold the record for the most burnt ready-made biscuits if it were ever added up.
Right.
Marilyn wasn't amused.
It took me all day to make this bread.
To prepare it and for it to rise, and look how unappreciative you are.
Grandma, I'm sorry I forgot.
Caroline battled back tears until her face brightened.
I know.
Maybe we can get you a bread maker for Christmas.
A what?
Marilyn's self-pitying expression turned to one of horror. Jonas squeezed Caroline's shoulder and locked his jaw to keep from laughing and arguing. Every week the same scene played out in one form or another. If not because of burnt bread, then for spilling something after Marilyn had finished cleaning or not eating themselves sick to prove they wouldn't starve.
There was always something. We're very appreciative, Jonas murmured, feeling guilty at his thoughts. Since Lee left, Marilyn tried hard to help out. And he was grateful. He just hated feeling like Marilyn's generosity was an anvil held over his head, a reminder that he'd done wrong by not being exciting enough for her daughter to hang around. Grandma, we love you. Yeah, he added when Caroline nudged him. What would we do without you? His mother-in-law's eyes filled with tears, and she held open her arms. Glancing at him quickly, Caroline stepped forward into her embrace. I love you too, Caroline. I'm just in a mood today, since your grandpa's business trip was extended. All's forgiven. And I'm so looking forward to our evening out, aren't you? I knew the ballet would make a wonderful birthday gift. Of course, I'd rather it be us, but I understand if you'd like to bring one of your little friends along. Well, that's very generous of you, Marilyn. I'm sure Caro would love to invite someone. Marilyn smoothed her hands over Caroline's unruly red hair and smiled. This is going to be so much fun. We'll have to hurry, though. There are only 2 months left to find an appropriate dress, but I know the perfect color, pink.